good to be here today. Mazel tov on the big day yesterday of everybody getting their gemaras. I see it's on all of your desks, and it's still pretty, except for yours for some reason. In front of your desk, okay? And I see they're all still pretty well put together. The corners aren't rubbed out. There's still no the binding is still intact. Mirtz Hashem, that will change over the next couple of weeks. But I'd like to just share a little bit about why do we spend from now on, for the next 15 years of your yeshiva career, 10, 15 years hopefully, and hopefully for beyond that as well, for really the rest of your life. The majority and the focus of your learning really is going to come from Gemara. It's really going to come from the books that you got yesterday, in terms of Bava Metzia, and then the rest of Shas as well. And hopefully you'll be able to learn through all of it, and be able to know all of it, be able to own all of it. And why is that considered the main text of Jewish learning, specifically from now, really for the next many years of your life? So there is, although I don't have it at home, and I wasn't able to track down, there is, in this book, Rav Moshe Scherer. Anybody know who Rav Moshe Scherer was? Anybody know? Yeah? Well, who is he?
Well, you told me about him.
I told you about him? Okay. What about him? You don't remember. Yeah. All right. So Moshe Scherer was, he ran Agudas Yisrael of America. He built it up from really being a nothing organization to being a massive organization. Spent much time lobbying, working with government officials, things like that, and was really the director, the focal point of many of the Gedolim, many of the great sages in America. So he carried in a briefcase with him a letter that was given to him at some point. It was a letter that was in German, and it was a letter that one German official sent to another during the Holocaust, saying that when we're exterminating the Jews, we should take extra care to make sure that the yeshiva guys, that the yeshiva bachrim are exterminated. Why? Because they learn Gemara, and Gemara is in Talmud, and Talmud is the future of the Jewish people, and by getting rid of that, we're going to ensure that all the Jews are gone, chas v'shalom. So what's so special about it? What did they see in it? That they saw that, oh, this is the future of the Jewish people. So there is, anybody ever see a news story? It was around a couple of years ago. Then in South Korea, they started learning Gemara. Did anybody get a hold of that? That they translated Gemara and the Talmud to South Korean because they saw the wisdom in the Talmud. So what did they see? So perhaps they saw this, although I don't think this is the reason that they saw Gemara. There is a book that came out recently, the Talmud of Biography. I would not recommend you read this book for at least another 10 years. But in the introduction, when he talks about what's so special about Gemara, he gives the following example. A man comes to the rabbi and says to the rabbi, "Rabbi, Rabbi, I see you learn Talmud so much. Teach me a little bit of Torah. Teach me a little bit of the Talmud. Teach me a little bit of Gemara." So the rabbi said, "Come on, you don't have the head for it. You're not going to understand it." So the man said, no, please teach me." So, all right, the rabbi says, "Fine, let me give you the following question. Two people fall down the same chimney. One comes out clean and the other comes out dirty." Right? We got that? Two things here. One clean, one dirty. So which one goes to wash themselves? Anybody want to raise their hand? Which goes? Yes?
The one with the non-dirty face.
The one with the non-dirty face. Oh, so you're already at the next step. The first step you're supposed to say is the dirty one, right? So the rabbi says, "Oh, come on. How does the dirty one know he's dirty?" Right? So the rabbi says, "I told you you didn't understand Gemara, forget it, get out of here." So the guy says, "All right, give me another chance." All right, same question. Two guys fall down the chimney, one guy's dirty, one guy's clean. So who washes himself? So what's your name?
Jacob.
So Jacob said, the clean one's going to wash himself. Why is the clean one going to wash himself? Yeah?
Because he sees the dirty one's face and thinks his own face is dirty.
He sees the dirty one face. He figures he's clean. He figures he must be dirty also, so he's going to go wash himself. The dirty guy sees the clean guy, so he figures he must be clean like the other guys. He's not going to bother washing himself. Right? It's a good answer. So the rabbi says, "I told you, you're just not going to understand the Gemara thing." So what's the next answer?
Both. The one with the dirty face, he's one with the clean face, washing his face. He'll check to see if he
was the one. So he actually gives the opposite one. He says, one last time, two men write a question. He says, he pondered, he thought about it, he said, "All right, the clean one looks at the dirty one. He looks at me, he thinks, and he's not washing, so he must think that he's clean, so I must be clean, so neither of them end up washing," which is the same thing that you said, but to the opposite. So the rabbi says, "Oh, come on, you really don't get it. How can you imagine that two people fall down the same chimney and one's going to end up clean and one's going to end up dirty?" Right? The whole question doesn't make sense. So maybe that's the reason that one should learn Gemara. That sharpens the mind. But I don't think that's not the reason that we're going to spend the next the rest of our lives learning Gemara so much. So there is a essay, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who was the Rav first in America and then made Aliyah to Israel, was the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva Har Etzion Gush. Maybe you have siblings or parents that learned there. Passed away, I think, about 2 years ago. So he has an essay, which is written in very hard English, very tough English, but it's entitled, Why Learn Gemara? It's a good question, right? Why learn Gemara? So he, over the course of his discussion, comes up with four important reasons as to why one should learn Gemara. What's so important? Why is it so relevant to our lives from here on out? Okay? So number one, and I'm going to give his reasons, but I'll develop them a little bit for you guys. So number one, he writes, is that it is the source for everything that we do. Throughout all of halacha, throughout all of Torah, so whenever any practice, anything that one comes across, anything that we might translate as a minhag, or anything that we're going to translate as a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan, it all comes out of the Gemara. And the source is, that what does one do to figure out why do we do this, or how do we do this, or what exactly, why is he doing it this way, why am I doing it that way? So you could trace everything back to the Gemara somehow. And that's just the source. That's where everything, and that's where everything comes from. So without a real understanding as to where, as to how to learn that source, a lot of the things that we do just aren't really going to make much sense. Or beyond that, we're just not going to, it's not going to have much meaning to us. It's just going to seem like empty practices, empty things that we do that don't have much relevance to us. That's issue one. Issue number two is the idea that once one learns Gemara, there are certain rules within the Gemara. Have you learned Tanayim and Amorayim? We've learned the... Okay. So we've learned that there are certain rules called... There's a Mishnah. You've all learned Mishnayis, right? Then there's the Gemara. How is the Gemara compared to the Mishnah? So the Gemara comes a couple hundred years later, right? If you're a member of the Gemara, who you're called an Amora, right? An Amorayim. So the rules are, the rules of the game are that they can't argue on a Tana, right? With a few exceptions. But they're not allowed to argue on a Tana. Right? And if an Amora doesn't have a source of a Tana and someone else does, so who wins the fight? Right? The one who does. Right? Now that those rules as they're spelled out, right? And so therefore if an Amora doesn't have a source, he has to find a Brisa. We've learned what a Brisa is yet? Brisa, okay. You'll learn what a Brisa is very soon, I'm sure. So he has to find a Brisa, he has to find another source. And that's how Gemara works. That's how certainly the halakhic sections of the Gemara work. Well, that continues on as well. That you have the Gemara. Then you have the commentaries of the Gemara. The commentaries of the Gemara trying to understand what the Gemara says. Right? Nobody after the time of the Gemara. If I decided, you know, there's an opinion, there's Rabbi Yehuda says this, and Rabbi Meir says that, and Rabbi Gross says the third thing. Right? Am I allowed to, does that work? Am I allowed to do that? No. Why not? You're nodding your head?
Because
isn't allowed to argue on Tanayim. Rabbi Gross isn't allowed to argue on Tanayim either. Right? What's your name?
Shalom Friedman.
Okay, nice to meet you. Shalom Friedman. Got it. Right? So the same thing works. And by the way, there's Rishonim and there's Achron. These are all terms that you're going to. So by learning Gemara, you become part of that tradition. This is a it's not so long. We think about, the Gemara is this ancient book. It's not so long ago. Right? It was written 1,300 years ago, 1,400 years ago. It's unclear when exactly it was written, but some 1,500 years ago. That's not so long ago. And you become part of that tradition. So there is Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, whose name I'm sure that we've heard about. Hopefully you'll learn more about him over these years here. He was once, he was old already, it was year 1974. He visited a Pidyon HaBen of one of his students, and they asked him to speak, and he wasn't going to speak. And he said, no, get up and speak. And he offered these words, which are like, brilliant. He says, I'm an old man, I'm not tired, I can't necessarily just speak on blank. But then he got up and spoke. And he says, when I start a shir, my door opens, meaning I'm in shir, the rabbi is there, he's describing himself, and an old man walks in and sits down. So my students call me the Rav, but he's older than the Rav. Who's he? He's the grandfather of the Rav. His name is Rav Chaim Brisker. Have you heard that name? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So he comes in, and he's sitting in the room. Then the door opens again, and another old man comes in. He's older than Rav Chaim, plus he lived in the 17th century. His name is Rav Shabtai HaKohen, the Shach. Heard that name? Maybe not. You'll come across him in a couple of years. The Shach, the famous Shach, he has to be present any time we learn Dini Mamonos, whether we're learning Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, as you're learning, maybe you'll come across a Shach over the course. It's on the list, maybe? Maybe in sixth grade you'll come across a Shach. So he comes into the room. Then more visitors show up, some from the 11th, the 12th, the 13th century, some even lived earlier. They're Rabbi Akiva, Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ravid, the Rashba, and more than just keep coming in. And they're all present. They're all in the room, as you learn on your daf of Gemara. As you learn, you continue to learn. So they're all present. All those hundreds and thousands of years of Jewish history are all coming in the room. And he goes on to describe, the most amazing thing is, we're all speaking the same language. We all say the same words. We all have the same meaning. We're all talking about the very same halacha. And it's just, I'm having a conversation with them, and I'm learning from them. And perhaps even, sometimes they might even be learning from me. There is, I'll tell you a story. When I was in high school, anybody here's parents went to MTA? You did?
Father.
Your father went to MTA. If any of your parents, anybody in this room's parents went to MTA, they probably had encountered with Rav Yitzchak Kohn.
My uncle did.
What?
My uncle did.
You could ask your uncle if he was ever in Rav Yitzchak Kohn's year. Who's your uncle?
Yossi
Faber. Oh! Yeah, okay, he's a year below me, kind of. So anyways, really? Okay, good to meet you. What's your name?
Yosef
Mazur. Yosef Mazur. Oh, okay, got it. So we were once talking in Shir, and he quoted a Ritva. The Ritva is a commentary on the Gemara. And the Ritva gave a certain explanation in the Gemara, and I said a couple of words that I shouldn't have said. And those words were, but that Ritva doesn't make any sense. And that got him very upset. Why did it get him very upset? And he got up and he yelled at me. He didn't yell at me. He talked to me very loudly, saying, "Oh, because you're a junior in high school and you don't understand what the Ritva says, therefore he doesn't make any sense. Now he doesn't make, because you don't understand it." So there is a need to have a little bit of respect. That's part of what the Gemara teaches you. Why did the Amoraim not argue on the Tanayim? Why does that rule work out? Because they say they probably had the same question that I had. So having that amount of respect is a very important part of Gemara. On the other hand, there is still an opportunity for each one in this room to make their mark. There's always, and I've had even in my life, a couple of questions that I'm sure all Bayim in this room have all had these issues as well. You come across a question, and no one even deals with the question. How did they miss that question? And nobody deals with it. You keep working on it. Sometimes you find somebody else who deals with it, and sometimes you don't. And what happens when you don't, but you still have the question? What do you need to do? Sometimes it means you got to come up with your own answer. And we know what we call that? We call that a chiddush. You've heard the term a chiddush? A new idea. A chiddush is a new idea that perhaps nobody else had come up with before. And you work at it, and sometimes you could be right. I have a few that I never found anybody else dealing with this question. But I'm convinced that my answer is the right answer. A good question is a good question. The answer is the right answer. There is. For Salvechik writes in a different book that he has. Really, it's you got to read. I'm not going to read the entire two pages, but I'm not sure you could get through these two pages without crying. He describes when he was a young boy. Younger than you. I would expect him to be about 6 or 7 years old in this story. That his father was the rabbi of the city, and people came and learned. Bachrim would come. People would come and learn with his father. His father was the Rebbe, and they would come and learn with him, advanced students. And he describes that, you know, these weren't big houses where he had his own bedroom upstairs. He had his bed on the side of the room. So his father was sitting with his students around the table. And he's on the bed on the side, kind of, what else is he going to do? He can't watch TV. He doesn't have iPads yet. So he's listening to his father, not really understanding what's going on. And he says, but I didn't really have any friends. I was a rabbi's kid. You know, rabbi's kids, it's tough for them. So I had one friend, and he was the Rambam. And he said, when my father was giving shir and was talking about the Rambam, this old man, he says here, don't laugh at me, but this man would come in and he would sit with me on the bed. And he says, the Rambam was a regular guest in our house. He came regularly. Whenever my father was giving class, the Rambam would walk in. and my father would talk about the Gemara, and he would explain the Gemara, and he said, how did Rashi explain the Gemara? And he explains how Rashi explained. How does Tosfos understand the Gemara? And now you got Tosfos. And then he says, how does the Rambam explain the Gemara? And why does the Rambam not explain it like anybody else did before? So this is not necessarily 5th, 6th, 7th, or even 8th grade. This is probably 9th or 10th grade already. But why does the Rambam explain it differently? And then he says, and my father wasn't sure. He said, I don't understand why my father explained it. And people argued on the Rambam. And my father was like very sad. How did the Rambam understand the Gemara? And he's working, and he's working, and he's working. And people offer answers, and my father rejects them. And then my father came up with an answer. He says, I don't understand anything at all about the issue under discussion. I didn't really know what they were talking about. But two impressions were formed in my young, innocent mind. Number one, the Rambam was surrounded by opponents, enemies, who wanted to harm him. The only defender was my father. If not for my father, who knew what would have happened to the Rambam? And he continues and explains. He says, often the Rambam would emerge the winner. He would defend the Rambam. And father's face was shone with joy. He defended his friend, Rav Moshe, the Rambam. A smile of satisfaction appeared on the Rambam's lips, meaning the guy who was sitting next to him, who didn't really exist. But the Rambam smiled, and I was also happy. And I ran and I told my mother, Mommy, Mommy, the Rambam was right. He defeated the Raivit. Father came to his aid. How wonderful father is. Right? That's pretty good. Right? Father came up with a chiddush to defend the Rambam. And then he continues on and says, but sometimes, father, it didn't win. Abba wasn't able to come up with an answer. And my father worked on it, and he was quiet and he thought about it for a while. And finally, says his father, who's Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, picks up his head and says, the answer will have to wait for Eliyahu HaNavi to come. What the Rambam says is extremely difficult. There is no one who can explain it. The issue remains something that needs clarification. And a silent agony expressed itself on each face. Everybody was sad. And he said, tears came to my eyes too. He says, I even saw a teardrop in the Rambam's eyes. And slowly I went to my mother and I was so sad. And I said, Mother, father can't resolve the Rambam. What are we going to do? So what do you think his mother told him? Don't be sad, mother would say. Father will find a solution for the Rambam. And if he doesn't find one, then maybe you'll grow up and you'll find one. The main thing is to learn Torah with joy and excitement. Right? There's room. There is a makom. There's space for a chiddush. There's space for new thoughts. Everybody in this room has something that they can contribute to the world of Torah. So those are two reasons to learn Gemara. Number one, because that's the basis for everything. Number two, to recognize that you are part of the tradition. You're part of the Mesorah. Reason number three is the idea of how one learns Gemara, how one learns Halacha. How do you know what to do? There is a wild Gemara in the Sechel Sotah. It says something that at first glance is totally startling. The Gemara says, Tanayim Mavle Olam. Anybody know what that means? Tanayim, who are the Tanayim? We know what the Tanayim are. Mavle Olam. What does Mavle Olam mean? Anybody know? One? Twice? Three times? Yeah?
Destroyers of the world,
right? There's a Gemara, so it says that Tanayim are destroyers of the world. Now, we've just spent the last couple of years learning Mishnayos. It's hard to imagine, but Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, they're pretty good guys, right? Rabbi Kiva, these are pretty impressive guys. What does it mean? How could they possibly describe as being destroyers of the world? So the Gemara continues and says, Mavli Olam Salkadaita? Really? They're destroyers of the world? How could that possibly be? So rather, the Gemara says, Shemorin Halacha Mitoch Mishnasa. The problem is a person who paskins halacha just by learning Mishnayos. You've all learned the Mishnayos of the second parak of Mishnayos so far this year, right? You learned Mishnayos of Sukkah last year. Are you ready to answer all the questions with regards to the laws of Sukkah? With regards to which of the lulav, right? No, no, right? Why not? So we have to, yeah?
We haven't learned it with that depth yet.
You haven't learned it with that depth because there's questions on each other. The Gemara, what the Mishnah says isn't necessarily how we understand it. It's not necessarily how we decide. You have to be able to see how they interact with each other, how they work with one another. And that is the next level of Gemara. Gemara teaches you the way of Torah interacting so that not only will you be somebody who just knows a lot of things, but you will know how to incorporate them into all of your halacha. It is all of the applications of Torah comes from comes from the Gemara itself. And that comes from all the way back. That comes from all the way back. The discussion that takes place. Tanayim, Amorayim, Rishonim, Achronim, Poskim, Bizman Hazeh, the authorities that we have today, they're all working along the same system. I have a story a couple of years ago, I remember my first year or two, when I was here, I was asked to speak. It's a little controversial, but I was actually to speak on a panel with rabbis, a conservative reform, and a the other one, Reconstructionist rabbi. And I spoke. We weren't debating with one another. That's why it was okay. We were just saying, this is what my movement believes. So the Reconstructionist rabbi, people have heard of Reconstructionist? You've heard of it? Right? So one of them, maybe. So one of them gets up and says, our movement was founded in 1940 when this rabbi did that. And he continues and tells his story. The Reform rabbi gets up and says, oh, our movement was founded in Germany in the late 1700s and it's developed in this, that, and the other way. The conservative rabbi says, we're really an American movement. We started in the early 1900s and, you know, the movement is really strong and we've continued, you know, until this day. So I'm last, I'm the Orthodox rabbi. He says, well, I don't know, our movement was founded about 3,500 years ago at Har Sinai, and we assume that we're just continuing the same, I mean, the same exact Torah, the same discussion that's been taking place for the last 3,000 years, we assume is what we're doing, with no changes, no adaptions, just perhaps encountering new scenarios for which we apply our Torah to. So that's idea number three, understanding what the basis is, understanding how everything works and interacts with one another, and that eventually will allow you to be able to paskin shailos, be able to figure out how to apply what you've learned to new things. Does the Gemara ever talk about a light bulb? No, I don't think it ever talks about a light bulb. Does the Gemara ever talk about fire?
Yeah.
So is a light bulb fire?
Yeah.
Maybe yes, maybe no. Is it always fire? There's different types of light bulbs, right? Is a light bulb that you screw in, that's one type of light bulb. Although even those might not really be the same anymore. But there's fluorescent lights that are different. There's LED lights that are different. The halacha about all these things are different. But it's all based on principles that are deduced and learnt out from the Gemara itself. And idea number four that one sees, that reason that we learn Gemara, is that when one gets involved, with the sugya, one gets involved trying, how do they, right, what Rav Soloveitchik was describing before, how do we resolve this sugya? We got a problem, we have to figure out how to resolve it, and ultimately figure out a resolution. You are ultimately living Torah. You're going around with the ups and downs of Torah, and it becomes just part of your life. And as, you know, we had, at least in Wynwood, I don't know if it did anywhere else, but it snowed in Wynwood this past Shabbos, right? So what is snow? What is the halachos of dealing with snow on Shabbos? So one could just say, well, snow is snow, but is it muksa, is it not muksa? Is it perhaps an idea of nolad, that it's a new creation on Shabbos, or is it not? Is an idea of dush, when you walk on it, are you crushing, which might be its own problem on Shabbos, or making a snow, right? All these things are, by learning Gemara, you don't just see it as snow anymore, you see it as a chefza, an idea, a halachic object which needs analysis. There is listening to one's parents. Listening to one's parents is not just something you do because otherwise you're going to get in trouble. Listening to one's parents now becomes a mitzvah, becomes a part of the mitzvah of Kivud Av V'Em. There is a story of Shraga Feivel Mendelevitz. When I taught here in 8th grade, I used to tell this story, and the guys took it. Maybe you guys will use it in your shir as well. Shraga Feivel Mendelevitz was a Rav in the high school in Torah Vadas, in the Sifta Torah Vadas. And the story goes that one time, I see this is a pretty, I don't think I've ever spoken to a class this big in Torah Academy. He was giving shiur, and two guys come in, and there were no more desks left in the room. Desks were gone. So the two guys go to get a desk from the next room, right? That's what you're supposed to do. So the two guys walk in with their desk, and he sits down. Rav Shraga Feivel says, no, I want you guys to sit in the other person's desk. Okay, that's the same desk. So Rav Shraga Feivel said, you want to know why? Because when you pull a desk for yourself from the next room, you're a schlepper. It means you're a mover. You're just taking something. When you move it for somebody else, you're a baal chesed. Right? Yeah, now you've done a kindness for another person. Right? So remember that whenever you get something. Right? When I gave shir, that became the thing. You bring in shir from another room. I'm now a baal chesed. I'm not a schlepper, but I'm bringing it for somebody else. And Gemara teaches that. You recognize that everything one does over the course of the day is part of the melechas shemayim. It's part of doing work on behalf of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then the last thing is, while, you know, this year, we don't get through the whole Parak of Eilim Metzias.
No,
over next year, hopefully we'll get through the whole Parak of Eilim Metzias at some some point, and hopefully when you fake a siyum, say, hopefully I'll be able to finish other mesechtos and other svarim, and I'll be able to include them. Don't think it's too much, right? You look at a shas on the shelf, it is big. It's this big. If you have the newer editions, it's this big, right? It's on, and we have a set. Okay. All right. You have a set of shas in there, all right? It's not too big. It's not too big. It is the possibility of every single person in this room one day to finish shas and to know shas and to earn it. There is a story. Now, I'm not necessarily saying we're going to go this far, but there is a story that Rabbi Shlomo Riskin tells, that he used to go, when he was a rabbi in Manhattan, he used to go on Fridays and meet with Rav Moshe Feinstein. You've all heard of the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein in this room? So he went and would meet with him every Friday morning. We talked to him about the questions that he had that week. One week, Rav Moshe says to him, before you leave, I want you to come with me to yeshiva. I need to do something with you. I need to do something there. So, okay, fine. So he walks him to yeshiva. He takes a paper bag off of the shelf. He doesn't know what's in it. He gets to yeshiva. He sees seven guys coming out of the building. He says, seven guys, perfect. Me, do we know one more guy? The guy says, yeah, I know one more guy. Great, we have a minyan. Well, what do we need a minyan for? We daven mincha already. No, we need a minyan because I'm about to make a siyum. So it's like, okay, I'm sure Rav Moshe finds, I'm sure you've made siyums before. I've never seen you like be this agitated. So Rav Moshe says, well, this is a siyum hashas. This is a siyum that I've concluded the entire Gemara. So I want to make it a little more special. So that's why I brought some crackers and I have a little bottle of whiskey here. So Rav Riskin says, yeah, but I'm sure Rav Moshe has finished shas plenty of times before. So Rav Moshe said, yeah, it's true, I finished it many times before. This is the 100th time I'm finishing shas. So I figured I'd do something special and gather 10 guys around and eat crackers. Right? So on one hand, I think we recognize I'm not necessarily going to put it up there, that we all in this room should finish shas 100 times. But realize that it's a book that ultimately has an end. And it's something that you can conclude. You put enough work into it, you wake up at 5:45 in the morning enough times to go to Daf Yomi, you do something like that, ultimately you get to the end and you could finish and you could be kun, you could acquire the entire thing. Right? That's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that as one moves along, you should celebrate your accomplishments. Celebrate that we finished a sugya, that we finished a mishnah, that we finished a perek. These things should be celebrated. But also with the recognition that there's a lot more that's going to be done. And Mir Hashem, this is the beginning of your path in the world of Gemara, in the Yama Talmud, the ocean of Talmud. You're beginning to swim. The first strokes are always very difficult, but as you continue on, it becomes easier. You come to recognize and understand more and more. Mir Hashem, you all grow to become great Talmidei Chachamim. Thank you very much for having me. Mazel Tov. Any questions?